Support for the Exchange podcast comes from you, our listeners, and from McLean Middleton, New Hampshire's largest law firm. For over 100 years, they've been committed to their clients, community, and colleagues. Locations in Manchester, Portsmouth, and Concord, New Hampshire, and Woburn and Boston, Massachusetts. Learn more at McLean.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, filling in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In the last decade, podcasts have become more than just a way to catch up on radio programs you missed. They've become an end in themselves. Some might even call them an art form. Investigative journalists bust through the constraints of the broadcast clock with long narratives. Companies give their devotees updates on the minutiae of their enterprise. And stand-up comedians take their one-liners off the stage and into the studio. And so much more. Today on the program, the seemingly infinite world of podcasts. Listeners, what podcasts do you love? Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We would prefer calls where you're making a recommendation for a podcast that you have no hand in creating, just something that you like, not something you have made yourself. Again, the number is 1-800-892-6477. Joining me for the show today, Rebecca Lavoie, digital director here at NHPR, host of Crime Writers On, a podcast that reviews other podcasts. She also writes about podcasts for Vulture. And Nick Capodice, education and engagement producer for NHPR's Civics 101, a podcast refresher course about how our democracy works. Welcome to both of you.
Oh, it's so exciting to be here.
It's an abject pleasure to be here, Peter.
Live radio.
Live.
Not recorded for later distribution.
No roadmap.
No roadmap at all.
But well, available as a podcast.
That's true. Yes, this later will be today. Available as a podcast later, but so much more fun right now to listen because you can actually call or comment and be part of this program. Listeners, we want you to be a part of it. If you're not sure how to subscribe to podcasts, by the way, we have made a how-to video where Laura Kanoy walks you through how to subscribe to The Exchange and other podcasts. You can do it on your smartphone or your tablet. That way you can listen to all our past shows or other shows from NHPR anytime you'd like. That video is at nhpr.org/exchange. It's also on YouTube. Just search for How to Subscribe to a Podcast with Laura Kanoy. Also posted it on Facebook. Check it out. Share it with your friends. Maybe you've got a family member who always says they might want to get into this crazy new podcasting thing, but they weren't sure how to make it work. So there's a how-to video there. Speaking of how to get into podcasts, I want to ask both of you how you got into podcasts. We'll start with you, Rebecca.
Well, a long time ago, I was actually a producer on a show here at NHPR, and in my side life, I have long been a true crime author, along with my husband, Kevin Flynn. We co-authored several true crime books, and my true crime writing life was very separate from my public radio life until a day in early 2014 or 2013 when I heard the podcast Criminal, which came out from UNC, North Carolina public radio station at the time, hosted by one of their hosts, Phoebe Judge, in which they used public radio style storytelling to talk about crime, many different aspects of crime. From one of their first episodes was about the Michael Peterson case, which is the center of a documentary called The Staircase, and they talked about the owl theory. I heard that podcast and I thought, first of all, I need to get on that podcast, which I successfully did. But then later that year, when the podcast Serial came out, we had the idea to create a podcast from the perspective of journalists and true crime writers about the podcast Serial. And we did kind of an episode by episode breakdown of the journalism and the storytelling and how Sarah Koenig was depicting the case in the podcast. When that podcast ended, we continued our show. And here we are 5 years later, millions and millions of downloads. Our podcast has turned basically into a business. We get pitched by networks to review their shows because we're kind of like the Siskel and Ebert of podcasting, especially in the true crime genre. We've been doing it for 5 years.
Yeah. And did it start as sort of like a marketing arm for the true crime that you were writing and became something else? Or did you always imagine it would be an end to itself?
No, I never thought it would be an end to itself. We thought it would be a fun project to do. Maybe, you know, we were on there with two other writers. So we thought maybe like people would be interested in like looking at our books or just interested in the idea of listening to podcasts. Honestly, it was a big deal for me to be able to tell people, like, check out this medium. And it's always been the mission of my show, and I think about it this way every single week when we record it, I want to teach people how to listen critically, because there are hundreds of thousands of podcasts out there. Many of them are terrible, let's be honest. And I'd like to like teach people, like, this is what to look for. And it's not necessarily a shiny, fancy thing made by a public radio station. It could just be something that has a quality that makes it worth listening to. And that's kind of the mission of what I, how I see myself in the world of podcasting and in the industry.
And I hope we can get back to the idea of what makes a podcast worth listening to later in this hour. But I did want to turn that same question to Nick Capodice here. Nick, how did you get interested in and in started working in podcasts?
Oh, well, when it comes to actually working and making podcasts, I think nothing is a substitute for noodling around in your basement on Audacity. I think
Audacity is a sound editing program.
Yeah, it's a free open source audio editing program. So when I was living back in New York, I worked at a place called the Tenement Museum, which is a museum about telling stories. So I worked at a storytelling museum, and right then I had this sort of background of how to orally tell something to somebody else. And I got to do some funny voices for Radiolab back in the day in New York.
So you're on Radiolab.
Oh, sure. Well, on a couple episodes. Okay. Yeah. So nothing really stunning, I promise you that. But and I did a couple, you know, a little bit of audio work for the Tenement back in the day. And when I worked here, started here at New Hampshire Public Radio, I was not a audio producer or a host. I was education outreach producer. The show Civics 101 was interested in having somebody think, how can we get this podcast more into schools? And I was suited to that job. I was lucky enough to get it. And that's what I started working on. And it became quickly clear that the format of the show had to change, sort of what we call in radio a two-way, which is what you're doing right here with me, Peter. You're asking me questions and I'm answering them. And we would always ask a guest a question about some civic concept and we'd answer it. It was just sort of didn't have sort of the dynamism to hook students in the classroom. So My co-host Hannah and I have sort of we were fortunate enough to rework the show to a narrative style with more music and sound design, and that's where we are today.
Mm-hmm. So let's make sure we are all on the same page with respect to what a podcast is.
Right,
Rebecca, is it just sort of audio on demand, like through whatever device you happen to be listening to?
Correct. All it is an audio file available on the internet. So a podcast. Literally, if somebody puts a piece of audio on a website and it's not even available on Apple Podcasts or whatever, it is still technically a podcast. All it means is that there's an audio file or program available for you to download or listen to through streaming.
And did that word come from like the iPod?
It did. It did. So initially.
But no longer limited to Apple products.
Not at all. In fact, that's one of the big things happening in the industry right now is this like rise of, quote, platforms and distribution channels and networks and apps through which you can listen to podcasts. The big one, a big revolutionary thing happening right now, of course, is the advent of smart speakers and their huge growth in homes that, you know, someone who has no ability or inclination to download an app, maybe they don't even own a smartphone, they can just tell their smart speaker to play, hey, find me a podcast about X. And, you know, the smart speaker will know how to do it. So it's a whole brave new world out there.
Mm-hmm. Lots of technology out there to enable your listening. So when we talk about or when we listen to a podcast and we hear from NHPR or from WNYC or from Gimlet Media, like what does that mean?
Well, very similar to TV there and movies, there are now production companies behind making podcasts. 5-6 years ago, really, it was like NPR and public radio stations and outlets like PRX and APM that were sort of the drivers of a lot of the audio that was getting a lot of attention. Them, in addition to like comedians in LA who also had like some coalition networks that had kind of built a while ago, like Marc Maron and Jesse Thorne, had sort of built these little mini networks. But now with the influx of big money into podcasting, because it is a huge revenue opportunity for media companies, there have arisen networks like Gimlet Media, which was founded by Alex Blumberg, who used to be a producer at This American Life. Slate, which was primarily an online publication, is now primarily a podcast network with an online publication. Vox is getting into podcasts. As we know, the New York Times with The Daily has really founded one of the most robust podcast networks in the industry right now. So there are, you know, not dissimilar to Universal Pictures and Fox Studios and, you know, Spielberg, there are production houses. Of course, there are also hundreds of thousands of people like me with little mini networks. I call it a network because it sounds fancier, but it's not. I have a studio in my home making shows, and we make two. So, technically, it's a network. But certainly there's sort of the whole gamut. And now you have HBO starting a podcasting arm. Literally, Netflix is doing podcasting. So now even TV production companies are going into that space.
So, Nick, what about the kind of podcasts that journalists produce? Like, what do you think podcasts are able to do that you feel like maybe newspapers can't?
Right. So The Daily, I mean, you listen to The Daily, but many of us listen to The Daily. I feel like The Daily sort of changed everything because, you know, it's doing news and it's doing it from a way where these news agencies can report on themselves. So in The Daily, you know, you'll have someone cut to a reporter talking about how she got a certain story. And it can really, I feel like podcasts can sort of let you see the bones and the structure of journalistic entities. And that's kind of new. This is just sort of philosophical rambling, but the podcast is a very different medium from reading print. It's more intimate. It's personal. It's one of the few I've had people say to me, podcasting and is one of the last sort of truly intimate ways to take media in. Because if you're watching a movie, you're usually watching it with somebody else. But if you put those earbuds in, you're listening to something on your own. Mm-hmm. Also, it allows you to inhale news while we commute, while you walk, while you drive, while you bike. Mm-hmm. So it sort of scratches that itch of our perpetual need to know what's going on, specifically politically and in the news.
Yeah, and a lot of that could also be said just for standard broadcast NPR style radio journalism. I mean, you hear the human voice. It's very intimate. You can do it. You can listen and absorb things while you're doing other things.
Right.
Rebecca, you kind of wear two hats here in that you are on the digital news side here at NHPR and you're producing podcasts on your own. What would make a newsroom say, okay, hold on, we want to pursue this story, but we can't pursue it to its maximum benefit in the traditional broadcast way? We got to do a podcast about that. What would make a newsroom make that decision?
Well, we have an example here of that. We produced Bear Brook exactly that way.
So what was it about Bear Brook that said, this is definitely not a radio thing exclusively. It's got to also be a podcast thing.
Well, there are two drivers. One is that it's a very complicated story that you can't tell in a short period of time. Another driver was that it was changing and evolving. And to some extent, Jason was reporting on it in real time. But most important, and to me, this is the most exciting part about podcasting as a medium right now, is it is the best way to get long-form enterprise journalism in front of people, to get them to listen to it, to get them to understand it. A great example is a podcast called Bundyville, which also had a second season called The Remnant, which was from The Oregonian and Long Reads. Now, this was a enterprise, long-term investigative story they also put up in print looking into the Bundy family. Of course, this is the family of ranchers out west that sort of had some conflicts with the government. And in the second season, The Remnant, host Leah Satilli took that reporting and said, you know, what happens after the Bundys? Really tying the movement of what used to be fringe white supremacist groups with larger political conversations in America right now, and bringing a long-form enterprise piece of journalism to millions of people that would not have read it otherwise.
And we have a little bit from Bundyville. We should play a little. The first season focused on Clive Bundy, the cattle rancher who had a famous armed confrontation with law enforcement over land use in 2014.
Today, Nye County is huge, the third largest county in the United States, and most of it is federal land. Carver hates that.
I hereby declare and promise that I will do everything in my power as a Nye County Commissioner to bring the government back to the people and protect your rights.
Right here where the crowd gathers, the U.S. Forest Service has closed a road to prevent ranchers from overgrazing their cattle.
But I think this is just as important as what happened 218 years ago, because we're taking America back.
Yeah.
So what's so interesting there is they are showing that basically, I mean, that was a politician running for office, making a stump speech about defying the law. And what this podcast is doing is taking this story that is really deeply rooted in this region, framing it like a true crime story, like a narrative, like a long-form immersive experience with music and with, you know, a scene setting, all of the things that you do to make a radio story great. And basically, her story still lives on the internet. It's still being downloaded by thousands of people every day who are discovering this journalism, who are really astonished by the depths to which it goes and how it actually ties to the political conversation now. It's a really great piece of reporting that I know I wouldn't have heard about if it hadn't been a podcast.
Well, listeners, as we talk about various different podcasts in this hour, we're going to be keeping a running list of these. So make sure you check out nhpr.org/exchange if you want to remember the name of something we happen to mention in this hour. You can also make a recommendation now if you have one. Send them by email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org or give us a call. The phone number 1-800-892-6477. Andrew wrote in to ask, have you heard about Trade-Offs? It's a podcast about the costly, complicated, and often counterintuitive healthcare system in the U.S., hosted by veteran healthcare journalist and NHPR alum Dan Gornstein. Well worth listen. Thanks very much, Andrew. Really appreciate that. And also from Katie, my favorite is definitely Outside In, which I save up and then binge listen to when I'm out in the garden all weekend. I swear we did not plant those emails.
I listen to Outside In, too. Honestly, I don't Me help too. Make Outside In. I listen to Outside In all the time. It's so fun and so earnest and so good, and I learn something new every time.
Katie also goes on to say, on a daily basis, I have to give kudos to the NPR Politics podcast that manages to produce informative, fun, occasionally hysterical podcasts all the time in the oddest hours of the night in the weirdest places, and yet they are consistently excellent. I will add a plus one to that comment from Katie because I tend to sort of get out of the sort of daily broadcast and then have, you know, people like Tamara Keith and Domenico Montanaro really break things down for me. And I did have questions for the both of you about, you know, podcasts and political coverage. And I'll start with you, Nick.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think the role is of podcasts in covering political candidates now, especially in this first in the nation primary state?
Well, I think it's wonderful that podcasts can go really deep in exploring systems. And we here in public media are trying to take a non-biased view of something like, let's say, the upcoming election. Podcasts, be they public radio or not, allow people to have conversations that you would not normally be able to have on the air in public media of a depth. Can He Do That, for example, was a podcast that came right out in the wake of the Trump election, which was just, can he do that?
Legally, can President Trump do the thing he is trying
X?
To do? Yeah.
But then you also have podcasts that approach a tone about politics that we can't have, even like NPR Politics can't have, like our very own, and I'm not just trying to push it because we make it, Stranglehold, which is about the New Hampshire's first in the nation primary. It's a podcast that has swear words in it. It has people saying not G-rated language about other things. And it's a real fun, sort of rocky, no holds barred, no roadmap approach to the first in the nation primary. Podcasts, you can kind of let your, I don't know, what's what I'm trying to say? Let your everything hang out.
Yeah, it's
more.
Very personality driven.
That's what I'm looking for.
This is why we're seeing presidential candidates going on podcasts. Yeah. I mean, you know, Pod Save America has hosted presidential candidates. Kamala Harris did an episode. You know, recently Preet Bharara did an interview with Andrew Yang and like surprised his mom by like bringing her in on the conversation. Mark Maron had President Obama on his show
in his
podcasting garage. I mean, that was really the moment, I think, where politicians realized if they want to reach actual people who are listening to something carefully, that is the place to go to do it.
Yeah, and worth mentioning that Mark Maron is not a journalist. He's not a political journalist. He's a comedian.
Nope. Doesn't mean he's not smart, though.
No, exactly. There's no requirement that you have to be. I mean, the audience is what draws people and makes it seem worth it to these politicians, but worth mentioning because that's new, right? I mean, we don't have presidents sitting down with comedians for more than an hour as President Obama did at the time.
That's right. And it's really an opportunity for, I think, people in public life, especially people running for office, to show a side of themselves that is actually authentic and spontaneous and, you know, respond to things off the cuff. And it's interesting because I think that some of the more successful appearances, I think about Kamala Harris is a great example. She had sort of a viral moment on a podcast early in her campaign that I'm not sure she's been able to replicate, where she was kind of talking about, you know, the music that she listened to growing up and, you know, her like love of Snoop Dogg and all that stuff. And it kind of got people's attention and sort of said, OK, this is a senator. This is somebody who was, you know, a district attorney, but it's also somebody who's a fan of music. And that is just a way to look at people in public life in a way that we don't typically do.
And I remember before the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton's campaign was producing a podcast series with just her.
Right.
So
that's a different kind of thing. Yeah, certainly. But yeah, that's certainly something that I'm sure we'll be seeing more of.
Well, what about the fact that, you know, with podcasts, you can, in the same way that people can curate their social media feed, also curate what they're listening to in podcasts and in a way reinforce the echo chamber. I mean, is that something that you think about? Nick, you have a pensive face on right
well,
now.
Well, I was thinking about when it comes to choosing podcasts, I feel like people are frustrated, including me, with the sort of, there's a the paralysis of too much choice. There's just so much out there. How on earth do you know what you want to do and what you want to listen to? And in a result, yes, Peter, you do start to curate your own little echo chamber. At least politically, I think I do that. There's so many different types of podcasts. I tend to listen to a very specific type of podcast. So, yeah, so maybe we're going to reach an area where we just nothing new kind of happens because we keep listening to the same thing. I don't know, Rebecca. What do you think?
I will say one thing that has it's both good and bad recently, because podcasting has become so much more corporatized, and because there is more money behind it. And so, of course, now there's marketing behind it and publicity behind it. It does seem that when you look at these curated lists, the best of lists, the must listen lists, right, there is a preponderance of network shows kind of floating up. And the one thing that I really would encourage people to look for when they're starting with podcasting, sure, start with some of those network shows. Start with the big ones. Start with the Pod Save Americas and the Slate, Pop Culture Gab Fest and the Political Gab Fest and all that stuff. But then really look for other kinds of conversations, because they are out there and they are really smart and they're not necessarily happening where you would expect.
Well, that's really interesting. And listeners, in addition to our calls for your recommendations, I'd love to know if you have made an effort to listen to a podcast that espouses views with which you do not agree. That would be really interesting to hear. Did you make an effort to hear a podcast about things that you don't agree with, from people that you know you don't agree with? Let us know. We'd love to hear about what you did. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Of course, if you've got recommendations of stuff we should be listening to, we want to hear those as well. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, 1-800-892-6477. It's all about podcasts today, and we'll talk more in a bit. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back.
Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
This is the Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Canoy. Today, all about podcasts. If you've got a particular area of interest, it is so easy to open up your podcast app on your smartphone or tablet, search for a few keywords, and find people producing stories or having conversations about whatever your interest is. So, what have you found? And would you recommend it? Tell us about the podcasts that have moved you, the podcasts that maybe have changed your minds politically. The number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org or comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Don't forget, we've made a how-to video where Laura Canoy walks you through how to subscribe to The Exchange and other podcasts on your phone or tablet. You can find that video at nhpr.org/exchange. Joining us for this conversation, Nick Capodice, education and engagement producer for NHPR's Civics 101, a podcast refresher course about how our democracy works. Rebecca Lavoie, digital director here at NHPR, host of Crime Writers On, a podcast that reviews other podcasts. And Maureen McMurray is joining us for this part of the program. She's director of content innovation and audience development at NHPR. Hey, Maureen, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So we have some comments from folks who have been writing in their recommendations. Again, did not plant this. Walter recommended Bear Brook.
Yeah.
NHPR. Thanks. Thank you, Walter. That's great. Also, NPR's Embedded. Walter writes, this comes out sporadically and covers different topics. The latest was how schools and law enforcement handled complaints of threats by white supremacists. And the BBC's Tunnel 29, The Escape, about East Germans trying to dig a tunnel into East Berlin to free their loved ones. So historical podcasts, current event podcasts, they're all over the place. I wanted to ask a little bit about barrier to entry for podcasts. And we'll go to you on this, Nick. Pretty easy to make a podcast, yes?
Yeah, so I am. There's, to my mind, there's like two big schools of thought when it comes to the barrier for entry for podcasts, and I'm totally down with the other side, and I respect the other side's opinion. there's this sort of statement going around that podcasts have such a lower bar of entry to make them than video, for example, and that is true. I mean, video cameras are expensive, DSLR cameras are expensive,
lights
are expensive.
Editing is hard.
Audio editing is frankly easier than video editing, and you can go crazy places with audio editing that you can't with video. The contrary viewpoint to that is, well, hey, no, our work takes a lot of time, a lot of work to make a good podcast. And I agree with that.
But so the view is, hey, proceed with caution. If you're going to make a podcast,
you know, work it out. And hey, my job's harder than you think. You know, but I am a huge advocate for saying, no, it doesn't have to be. I think that the barrier is and should be low. I want more students out there making podcasts than you could even imagine possible. You can get programs like Audacity. You can get a mic, a good blue. Well, there's a couple. I'm not going to espouse any companies, but mics can be cheap that are decent, that are USB. They just plug into your computer. You can get free sound from great websites like Free Sound Archive, and from YouTube has great free copyright free sound. Sound effects from great, wonderful archival sources on the internet. You can get to work and make something crazy, and yeah. I want people to do that.
And as a result of the word you described, like Maureen, there are so many podcasts out there, and you are overseeing the professional development of several here at NHPR. How do you make ours stand out?
I think they're in two ways, really leaning into the expertise that we've honed over decades here at NHPR. And it's a combination of what Nick was talking about, that really leaning into the sound quality of things, of the narrative arc of stories, things that we do with editing that we take quite seriously and put a lot of time into, and also journalism. I think that's the thing that makes us stand out in this sort of massive field, is that we have reporters who are doing a lot of enterprise work. And so you think of something like Bear Brook, that's a perfect example of a podcast that has all of that, where you had Jason Moon composing the music. He had been reporting on that story for 3 years. We spent well over a year ahead of time laying out what the storyboard would look like, doing fact checking and all of those things. And I think in the end, you hear the quality of that podcast, and that's what really drew a lot of listeners to it.
So you're going the extra mile. Listeners tend to appreciate that, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I really do still feel that the cream rises to the top in this space, and for now anyway.
Mm-hmm. But Rebecca, not necessary. It's not necessary to have an overly produced podcast. You can have a simple conversation with simple tools, and it can still be compelling and informative and whatever else you need from a podcast.
Absolutely. And this is something that I like to remind people of all the time, is that when The Daily first launched, The Daily from The New York Times, which is by far one of the most downloaded podcasts in the history of the medium, It was not complicated and it was not great as far as production goes. I mean, if you watch the show The Fourth Estate on Showtime, you literally see Michael Barbaro going over to people's desks in the newsroom and bothering them and being like, can I just get you on the podcast? Brilliant idea. I actually personally like The Daily a little bit more when it's a little bit more raw, a little bit less produced, a little bit less slick. It felt urgent. It felt like there is a reason why this doesn't sound great right now, because the only time I can talk to Maggie Haberman is in the middle of this busy newsroom. But it had an energy to it that I really, really loved. And there are still outlets. I mean, I will say, as somebody who used to work with Slate on one of their podcasts, they're not highly produced. It's a conversation between smart people about something related to something of interest to the audience. That's all it is.
And I would say, too, I mean, as much as I'm talking about, you know, spending this time in beautiful sound design, if you go into my phone, one of the things I listen to the most is Bill Burr's Monday Morning podcast. And that's just him, like, on his bed with his iPhone ranting. I don't know what that reveals about me, but then I'll turn and listen to Serial. So, yeah.
Well, if you know Bill Burr, you know what to expect from Bill Burr.
Exactly.
So, okay. Comedian Bill Burr, I should say.
Yes. Nick.
And like podcasts, they kind of let people be themselves in a way that you can't on, say, on the air in public media. Like these, you know, these shows of like lying down in your bed and speaking to your phone. Maureen, you know, Rebecca, you know, Peter, you know, we get a lot of people call who are frustrated with the way certain things sound on the air, right? Certain people's voices or the way certain people tell stories. You guys hear that a lot, right? Am I wrong?
Complaints about
that. Complaints about that. So a podcast, because of its nature, allows people to be themselves in a way that they might not be in their cosseted up real life world. And I really love it when The Daily sounded like that, like raw and themselves. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because about a decade ago in radio, I was instructed to pronounce, you know, whenever I would say W, I would have to say W. Like, I would say the word very carefully. But now, if I say W,
yeah,
it, no one seems to care. And I think that's because people, maybe this is just me projecting, but it seems like people are just getting used to the casual sound of podcasts, and that's bleeding over to broadcast radio.
Well, I hope that the barriers are coming down for what's allowable. This is the way things are done. You know, I'm always an advocate for let's stop doing things the way they're done because one person did it 40 years ago and make somebody else's life a living hell because of it. You know, yeah, go ahead, Roberta.
Well, it's really, it's a democracy with the podcast spaces because of the low barrier for entry, as you put it, like somebody with a voice that is not conventional,
yes,
somebody with a storytelling style that is not conventional. One of my favorite podcasts ever, podcasters in the world, is Dan Taberski, who is an experienced writer with an incredible storytelling voice, an incredible writing style. He put out a podcast this year called Running with Cops after, of course, he had this juggernaut podcast, Missing Richard Simmons, that came out a couple years ago. I think Running with Cops is not just one of the best podcasts of the year, but it's actually one of the ones that has the most impact. What Dan did is he brought his signature casual, loose narrative style to talking about how the show Cops is bad for the communities where it films and how it's bad for policing.
Well, let's hear a little bit of that podcast.
We're driving by low-rise industrial buildings crowded out by high-rise weeds, looking for drug activity by a public housing development. Petroselli looks exactly like he sounds. He is meaty, just a big brick wall of a guy.
And it's a source of a very high crime area.
So there you have Dan Taberski with, like, let's like go back in time 20 years, who would have said that guy has a lisp. He can't be on the radio. That guy's too casual the way he is delivering this. But his storytelling is what makes a podcast that's really a piece of data journalism about a television show and its legacy in law enforcement worth listening to. It makes it fun, it makes it entertaining, and it really pulls you in.
If you've got a, pardon me, I just want to bring a couple of listener comments into the conversation. By the way, if you have one you haven't sent in yet, the email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Amy from Brentwood recommended the Nod podcast. Amy writes, as a middle-aged white woman who grew up in New Hampshire, I wanted to know more about what it's like to be black in the U.S., and this has been helpful. I would love other recommendations about similar ones. And Peg and Rich from Exeter wrote in, this podcast has fleas for kids and mirthful adults. We found it to entertain our grandkids as we drove them 2 hours home, a dog and a cat, each with a podcast. That's great. Thanks very much, Amy, Peg, and Rich, for your recommendations. By the way, all these are going to be at nhpr.org after the show. We'll have a list of everything we talked about, so check out that if you're interested. Podcasts for young people. Now's a good time to talk to you, Nick, about Civics 101 and the sort of philosophy behind that, bringing civics education into the classroom.
Yeah. So, you know, when you're thinking about how to make something for the classroom, you're going to run into a lot of obstacles. One thing is, you know, our show is for a general audience, so we don't want to, quote unquote, dumb something down, you know, which, what a horrible expression. But we want to make something as appealing as possible to as wide an audience as possible. And that includes sound design, checking your vocabulary, and, you know, explaining things that we wouldn't normally explain. But what we've discovered is the things that we break down with students in mind are things that adults need as well. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of podcasts out there aimed for kids. One in particular that Hannah and I were this weekend in Austin, Texas, at a council for the National Council for Social Studies. 4,000 social studies teachers from across the country came to this conference, and we did a presentation on how to make a podcast in your classroom. And what they came and said was, podcasts are tremendous in the classroom, but there are a bunch of challenges. And these are ones that we might have, too. One thing is, you can't just play a podcast in a room and have 20 students sit there and listen to it over the speakers and expect it to go well. I mean, you could maybe do that, but that's hard. I can't sit still when listening to a podcast. When I listen to edits, I have to walk around. So teachers have been assigning podcasts to students and having them say, instead of just sitting in classroom for half an hour, put in your earbuds, put it on your phone and walk around outside while listening to this podcast. Then we all come together and we talk about it.
So it's been a good teaching tool.
It's been a great teacher. One teacher in New Hampshire, I learned this just recently. One teacher in New Hampshire uses Serial for the whole semester, a social studies teacher. They listen, they do a whole lesson plan, and they work with an inmate, with a prisoner in New Hampshire, to talk about his or her conviction. What student will ever forget that? You know, you're going to forget the three branches of government. You're not going to forget that one semester where you all listen to Serial together and you work with somebody in a prison.
Hmm. So students are a particular audience. People interested in politics, especially in the 2020 First in the Nation primary state, that's a particular audience. Maureen, what do you think of when you think of podcast audience? Like for something like Bear Brook, for example, like general audience, is there a targeted audience for that, or is everything that we want to produce here sort of more generally?
It really depends on the product. I think with Bear Brook, we knew that was a local story with national and even international relevance, that's the sort of thing that you could see also just across the industry with the popularity of the true crime genre, that certainly it's going to be of interest to people here in New Hampshire because it happened here, but it's the sort of story that if you live in California and you're interested in true crime or journalism that you're going to be drawn to. And we saw a really strong international audience with that as well. I mean, I don't think we were necessarily going after, you know, we want this particular age group, but we do know that podcast listeners tend to skew younger, although the fastest growing demographic with podcast listeners are older listeners. And I think, you know, and Rebecca can speak to this as well in terms of the demographics of listeners who consume true crime. It tends to be female. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Yeah.
And, you know, but when we think of our other products, like something like Patient Zero, that looks a little different. I mean, Lyme disease isn't something that's necessarily a top-level concern for someone living in Germany, let's say, but certainly it is here in New England, and you're starting to see it spread across through the Midwest. So we were really looking at people who would be interested in just a good narrative, people who are interested in science, people who are interested in health and the environment for that. So it's, you know, it kind of depends on the podcast.
Since you mentioned true crime, and we really should talk a little bit about how popular that is. Mm-hmm. Rebecca, did that start with Serial, or is that does that go deeper?
It started with Serial. What's really interesting about the true crime genre in podcasting, it really is the engine that is driving growth in the genre. It's not, I wouldn't say that it's the most popular kind of podcast. If you look at the list of the most popular podcasts in the world, it's up there. You'll see a lot of true crime, but it's definitely still driven by comedy. It's driven by news. It's driven by all sorts of other topics. There really has been a split. I mean, there are still some great narrative long form true crime podcasts out there. A lot of them are being produced by newspapers. There's a great podcast called Accused from the Cincinnati Inquirer, for instance. There's one called Breakdown, which is about the courts, from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. There's shows like Bear Brook. There are shows like The Clearing from Pineapple Street Media. But there's also this subgenre of very sort of cheaply produced shows that just talk about crime, like chat show type shows. And some of those are a little problematic. There have been some issues with plagiarism that have come up. There have been some issues with, you know, lack of sort of quote unquote journalistic responsibility and whether you have that when you're just a person talking about something on the web. But it really is the engine that makes a lot of new discovery of podcasts, you know, kind of happen. And what's interesting is that podcasts like Patient Zero, which is essentially a medical mystery podcast about the environment and you know, a disease, it is very much framed in the tradition of a true crime podcast, with cliffhanger endings, with, you know, sort of mysteries that are unraveling throughout. And a lot of storytellers and journalists are finding that that narrative style works for them, no matter what story they're telling. On the flip side, can I just make a nod to a new thing that we're kind of seeing bubble up on the true crime side?
Certainly.
There is a long tradition. The love of true crime is not new. Don't let anyone tell you that it is. Dateline NBC has been on the show on TV for decades. They have recently made a foray into turning their cheesy, leaning into style brand of true crime storytelling into podcasting. And they came out with a spectacular podcast that both Maureen and I are huge fans of, which is so Dateline in every way.
What does that mean for someone who hasn't been watching? Maureen, would you like to take that?
Kind of really over the top narration, kind of a bit bombastic. And I think what really drew me in, and this is a space I see that's vacant in the podcast ecosystem, is like the well-produced guilty pleasure listening, almost like reality TV. You know, if
I'm
watching,
that's missing. You don't think that's out there?
Oh, I don't think anyone. I think what we're about to hear is the first that's come even close to it. But you don't really. There are no, as far as I know, well-produced like reality.
There's no
TV
Big
style.
Brother podcast.
No, and it's. I think it once someone is able to solve that, then that's a whole
new audience.
Wait,
new
so you, Rebecca, Nick, you agree with that? There is no guilty pleasure listening. Anything you listen to right
oh,
now
oh.
is
guilty pleasure listening,
but not like this.
Not
like,
like
this pulpy, delicious.
Not that's actually good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're all very earnest when we make podcasts. We're just trying to save the world.
I hope there's a listener out there who will challenge us on that and say, actually, there is a guilty pleasure show that we should check out. Please let us know what that is. We're going to take a quick break, but I do want to thank Maureen McMurray joining us for this part of the show. Maureen, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Maureen, Director of Content Innovation and Audience Development at NHPR. We're going to stay with Nick and Rebecca for the last part of the program, and we do want to hear more of your recommendations. We've got a few from listeners that I'd like to share after a break, but there's always room for more. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org, or post on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back.
The days are cold, the nights are long, and now is a great time to plan your escape. Support NHPR today with a year-end gift, and you could win a trip for two to Costa Rica, so you can trade in the slush for a visit with a sloth. Stop fussing with your coat zipper and instead, fly by zipline through a vibrant jungle canopy. You'll be automatically entered to win this five-night stay to Costa Rica when you support the news you trust right now at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Kanoy, and today we're talking all about podcasts, the various kinds, investigative journalism, long-form interviews, comedy, relationships, advice, sports. We want to know what you like. Recommend it to us now. The email address is exchange at nhpr.org or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Susan in Nottingham wrote in. She says, in response to another commenter who was raised white in New Hampshire and is looking for podcasts that explain what it's like to be a person of color, is Scene on Radio. That's S-C-E-N-E on radio. Susan writes, I hope there are more by this guy because it's one of the best out there. Buried Truths is more historical, but also very good. Thank you very much, Susan. Really appreciate your comments. We're here in the studio with Rebecca Lavoie, digital director here at NHPR, also host of Crime Writers On, a podcast that reviews other podcasts, and Nick Capodice, education and engagement producer for NHPR Civics 101, a podcast refresher course about how our democracy works. And Nick, in your work with students, you're also running a contest on Civics 101.
Oh, yeah. And actually, it's funny. This what I'm about to talk about really harkens back to the previous two comments you've mentioned about the CNN okay. Radio podcast. And the special series they ran is called Seeing White, and it's one of my favorite things that has ever been made. That is audio. And that caller who referenced The Nod, this is a theme that is really worth talking about, Peter, which is specifically when it comes to students and teachers. I grew up in New Hampshire, and as a kid, there was one student of color in my entire school, at Merrimack Valley School, when I was there in 1991. Mm-hmm. Blessed be, New Hampshire is far more diverse than it was when I was a child. However, the makeup of teachers is predominantly white right now. So when it comes to representation, students seeing somebody who looks like them, hearing somebody who sounds like them, who relates to them, that's really hard to do in New Hampshire, which is maybe, I think, the fourth whitest state in the union right now. Podcasts are a tremendous way to get voices that you wouldn't normally hear. When I look at the very early Civics 101 episodes that we put out, we noticed that they were usually white men. Because if you Google, who can tell me about the Constitution, you're going to get a list of 7 million white men who can talk about the Constitution. However, that is since changing. There's a more eye to getting a wider diversity of voices on the air. And it has made our show so much better to pull on those things. Likewise, students, when they make audio, they themselves are seeing themselves because they are making the audio themselves. Our first student contest, we were like, make yourself a short podcast episode of whatever you like, you know, any as long as it's related to civics. It can be a radio play, it can be a fake call-in show. We got a bunch of fun submissions, and the winner was a 14-year-old named Adia Sambakui, She created a mockumentary in the style of Parks and Rec or The Office of the founders arguing about representation at the Constitutional Convention. And it was and Hannah and I got to work on it, and it was one of the most fun things I've ever had the privilege to work on.
Well, let's hear a little bit of it.
Ooh.
When you've never truly been free, and then you later wage a whole war for the sake of freedom, you're going to need to figure out how to define freedom on paper. And then make sure it applies to each and every imaginable situation you're about to face as a newly liberated nation. Farmer George didn't take the whole revolution thing well.
You're lost without me. Lost!
But America didn't immediately become the young, independent nation that don't need no motherland she wanted to be. For example, the Articles of Confederation.
We don't really have to pay your taxes, only state taxes.
We're about to get into a land war with Indians without your permission.
We're going to make it impossible for anyone to try to fix this document.
I thought you all hated this document.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, I know.
The federal government suffered a decade of this.
Wow. Well, that's that was so much fun to work on.
So good.
Adia, so she was 14 when she wrote this script. 14. I could just say that all day. She's going to be the next president. And she was from Springfield, Mass, and a delight to work on. And she wrote this, and it was fun.
And the next podcast is asking for stump speeches.
Yeah. So our current
contest,
say. Yeah, our contest is going right now. If anybody out there is listening, knows a teacher who's down with this sort of thing, we are looking for a stump speech, a 60-second audio recording of a stump speech. Just take out your phone and take a voice memo of what would you do if you were going to become president? What would you change? What are the problems we're facing as a nation? What would you do to change it? The details are at civics101podcast.org/contest.
It'd be really fun to hear what students submit to this contest.
I'm looking
forward to hearing it. I want to talk a little bit about the industry of podcasting, but first, a few recommendations from folks. Anne from Gilmanton says, if anyone missed Slate's first season of Slow Burn regarding the Nixon impeachment, it was truly excellent and gives perspective, not explicitly, to what we're going through right now. I believe season two was also about the Clinton impeachment.
That's right.
Yeah,
they're
both tremendous.
Yeah, very good if you want to get insights on what's happening now. Anne also recommended, recently found the Memory Palace. And she says, I love the fact that if I miss an episode of a favorite show like On Being, I can listen through the podcast. Even though I'm basically an NPR addict, the podcast gives me a chance to not be tethered to the broadcast day. And Katie asks, would love to know more about music choices. How does it get selected and what role does music play in the success of a podcast?
I care a great deal about this. Rebecca, you probably care a great deal. I've been talking a lot. So
no, it is a big conversation because some podcasts would be terrible without scoring. Some overdo it and it's a nightmare and too much. I think that the philosophy that I always like impart and one of the things that I criticize on my show when I hear the wrong music or it used poorly or it used well is it should underscore and add beats and give the listener a chance to think about what they just heard. It should not be a literal soundtrack.
Right.
That can be very distracting, although some podcasts use that kind of scoring to great effect if it's done well. Like Bear Brook would be a great example of that.
Yeah. And nice that Jason was able to sort of custom build the music for his own podcast. That's really nice. Small-time podcasters, they either have to use music from like Free Music Archive.
Correct.
You know, bands like Broke for Free and which we use a lot.
Or
we
you have to license.
Or you have to license.
Pay. Yeah, yeah. Because that is the right thing to do.
Right. I mean, This American Life, right? Don't they use like the entire soundtrack from Donnie Darko or something like that?
They really were big fans of I believe his name is David Shire's piece from The Conversation.
Okay. Yes. Any listener of This American Life knows exactly what you're talking about.
I think it was Chili Gonzalez who played that version. I care so much about music and podcasts because, and when I think about it, I am lucky enough to, I have a musical background. Taylor Quimby, he's got a musical background. People who work here at NHPR have music, and that helps us score
our
podcast. Regardless of where it comes from, if it's a beat from Free Music Archive or from Blue Dot Sessions, for example,
right.
We lean on them a lot. We have a license with them. I could spend and do spend hours just trying different music beds underneath a story I've already created. And then you tweak the story based on the music. The music and the narration work with each other. There's a fairly recent saying, you're looking for the third feeling, the third emotion. So
the third emotion.
Feeling. So if this piece is, if I'm talking about something that's heavy, that's like, you know, an injustice that was done during the, say, the Constitutional Convention. I don't want to just have music that's like, blah, 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 like you did a bad thing. So then what's the second emotion to that? I guess it would be, okay, so is it guilt? Is it sadness? And then the third emotion, you're trying to find a music that does something that's slightly different than what you're not trying to make the audience feel a certain way. You're trying to add to it. So what's the third emotion to, you know, something bad at the Constitutional Convention? I don't know, but we were able to find it.
Can I just make a recommendation for a podcast that I think everyone in America should be listening to right now? That
because
is actually,
the music's good?
It's around a musician, yes. And the okay. music informs it. It's a podcast by Jad Abumrad of Radiolab called Dolly Parton's America. It is very popular. It should be very easy to find. And Jad Abumrad seeks... because he's originally from Tennessee, because his father, who's a doctor, happens to be friends with Dolly Parton, he seeks to answer a central question in this podcast, and it's completely framed around her music.
2016, I'm living in New York. Dolly is on tour, and she comes and does a stadium show here in Flushing, Queens.
Here you come again.
And just the level of excitement of people around me was like otherworldly.
You're well done now.
Everybody around me was like,
Dolly Parton is a goddess.
She's a saint.
To me, Dolly is a superstar, brings herself to the level of the people.
I was like, whoa.
And the slide guitar.
That's right. And the central question of the podcast is, how is Dolly Parton the great unifier? We learned that Nelson Mandela listened to Dolly Parton when he was imprisoned in South Africa. We learned that conservatives love Dolly, liberals love Dolly, people of color love Dolly, gay people love Dolly, straight people. How? How does she have that magic? It is brilliant, and it will be a great automobile listen as you're traveling for the holiday.
And podcast listening, for the most part, is free. Right. I mean,
yes.
I don't think I've ever paid. You know, I've sat through, you know, the MailChimp ads.
Correct.
But that's about it. Right. So
correct.
Unless we opt for the model that Luminary, right, this company,
yes.
Luminary was trying to do a paid subscription, almost like Netflix for podcasting.
Correct.
But it didn't, like a few months ago, maybe Rebecca, you can explain why this went so poorly for them.
Well, they had have an idea, which is to provide a subscription-only service, a paid subscription service, which is difficult because the word subscribe in podcasts implies free. And that's something that it's a best practice to tell people. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe for free on Stitcher. Mm. Some podcasts do make premium content or an additional content for people who subscribe. You know, we did that with Bear Brook. We're doing that with, we did a little bit with Patient Zero. But the idea is everything that you want to make for free is offered to the audience for free, and it's paid for in other ways like advertising. Luminary launched their product in a way that unfortunately kind of rubbed the industry the wrong way by coming out with a campaign around like podcasts don't need ads. And a lot of people who are in the podcasting industry are like, that's great for you, but podcasts actually do need ads if we want them to be free and available to everyone. And it's not dissimilar to, you know, when we were growing up as kids, we had like ABC, NBC, CBS, and PBS. We didn't have, you know, cable. We didn't have subscription packages. We had an antenna and we got networks. And to get that content, we had to watch commercials. That's very much where podcasting is and is likely to stay for a long time. Luminary perhaps launched its product a little too soon. I don't know if consumers are ready for it, but they also basically bought wholesale some talent and took it away from the free side. So Leon Nafok, who used to make Slow Burn at Slate, is now making a podcast for Luminary that I suspect very few people are actually getting to hear because it's behind this paywall.
Yeah, and one of the things that really irritated people about the Luminary move is that they launched this app that had, as a free offering, all those podcasts that had ads.
Correct.
So you're so they're back to the drawing board, I guess.
It's something the industry is trying to figure out. And I really do believe I'm immersed in the industry on both sides of it, that for the foreseeable future, the vast majority of audio available will be available for free. It might mean you need to listen to some ads during the shows, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. It's also a great way for us at NHPR to fund our podcasting
ventures.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's why you hear sometimes our underwriting say, look at our many underwriting opportunities.
Exactly.
One of them is podcasting.
Exactly.
We're almost at the end of the show, but I did want to ask you if we could make it, maybe this is our guilty pleasure. Let's take it down to the gossip level and talk about our pet peeves.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yes, let's do it. So we'll start with you, Nick. Pet peeves, when you're listening to a podcast, you hear it and you go, oh, geez, not this again.
Right. You want to know what it is?
Yes, I do. I totally do.
that. No. That
the close up to the mic. No, I'm fine almost
with
whispering.
I'm fine with them. Fine with the close up to the mic whispering. But I don't. What bothers me is actually the opposite. When people remove all silence and breath and put on a condenser for a podcast, so many podcasts you listen to are just people speaking rapid fire, and then the audio editor goes in later and pulls out every deletes every every and everybody sounds like they're going a mile a minute.
So condenser for those who aren't.
Oh, sure. So yes. That is an effect in your audio editing software that makes your voice sound a little more broadcasty, like you're a little more, I'm Peter Biello. Yeah. So if you throw a condenser, I mean, Audie Cornish had a great tweet, and she's like, cut out every breath, every silence, throw on a condenser. Oh, and I'm listening to every single NBA podcast, right? So this is
big in sports broadcasting.
Yeah, and yeah. It's unlistenable to me. I cannot listen to a podcast that does not have some pause. We are taught in this industry, never be quiet, keep talking, but pause and breath is where the story is told.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Rebecca? Pet peeves?
One of my big pet peeves is when folks are interviewing people and they're not actually listening and they're just looking to ask the next question or show that they know what their guest is about to say. I would say the huge advantage podcasting has as a medium for conversation is the ability to let conversations take a course that you didn't plan. You should prepare. Doesn't mean you should just get into a mic with no plan, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't listen.
Mm-hmm. I would say that my pet peeve would be for a well-produced podcast, and I'm not going to name names, but I've heard a few produced by people who I know have a lot of money. Like, and they can do this, right? They could buy a nice Sennheiser microphone. And they position the microphone so far from their guest,
yes,
that you can basically hear the air conditioning just as well as the guest. And it's like, you invested so much money into
That's
this.
Right.
And the mic is
you
so
should know
far
better.
Away. You should know better. Hire an intern from NPR. You know, they know to do this. So you should be able to know this too. So that's what makes me go, oh, geez. Mm. You know, you missed the opportunity here. But that's the world of podcasting, right? Like, anybody can do it.
Well, I have another peeve, which is sort of the barrier with that word. Just saying the word podcast, it just turns people off. People are like, I don't do that.
No, what's a better word as we wrap up the show? Better word for podcast?
I don't have anything.
Audio experience. Listen to this. That should be the word. Listen to this.
Well, thank you all for providing this audio experience today. We really appreciate it. Nick Capodice, Education Engagement Producer for NHPR Civics 101, and Rebecca Lavoie, Digital Director here at NHPR, also host of Crime Writers On, a podcast that reviews other podcasts. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
Remember, the conversation continues online on Facebook and at nhpr.org, where we've got a list of all the podcasts we talked about today. By the way, someone asked about a gardening podcast for New Hampshire. Check out VPR's Garden Journal with Charlie Nardozzi. Pretty much the same region. Might be helpful for gardening. Scott from Hudson. Hope that helps. Listeners, if you're not sure how to subscribe to podcasts, check out Laura Kanoy's how-to video at nhpr.org/exchange. This is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Michael Brinley is our program manager. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.